quarter than our man Wild Bill. He was Cupid earlier this year. It's got to be distracting shooting free throws.
Welcome back to Aggie Legends. What's going on? Oh man,
You suck. Start over. Do it good. Gosh.
I'm not starting over. This is the start.
This is how it starts.
And everybody can see what kind of jerk you are.
That was the worst start ever.
You don't know.
Hey,
that.
You do it. You do it.
Yeah.
Hey guys, this is Wildcat Bill. And welcome back to Aggie Legends. We got a new guy on the show. It's our good buddy Kellen. Kellen.
What's up, dude?
How you been, buddy? What's new with your life?
Nothing.
Talk us about 2011 when you guys were the best fans in the nation. And they even said it on that one talk show.
Okay, you're done. I'm taking back over.
Yeah. Way better. Figure it out, decent, buddy. I'm impressed.
Okay, so anyway, I am in studio with my boy Kellen.
What's up, dude?
And we have a special guest today. His name is Ty Wesley.
What's up, Ty? Thanks for being here, dude.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'd like to be fun. More regular. Maybe take Bill's spot. I don't know.
Oh, I think you're in for a treat. Hopefully, Ty, you can stay on topic and you don't just kind of get too crazy with it.
Right.
Absolutely.
Hopefully.
Anyway, well, just first I want to say thanks for all the emails and everybody reaching out on the Twitter and the Instagram.
That was me. I was just trying to bang down your door so I can get on this podcast. And I thought we were friends.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I'm excited. I really, truly am excited about today. Ty, as many of you guys know, is a good friend of mine. And has been credited a few different times with the help and start of getting me to basketball games and doing the Wild Bill thing.
Yep. If you've listened to the first episode, you'd know that it was definitely that era. Ty was always encouraging Bill to come to his games.
Yeah, well, to be honest, Bill said he hated basketball.
Dude, I don't like watching basketball.
Nobody believed him. But he's like, I hate basketball. I said, come to the games. I bet you won't hate it. And then turns out they had him half naked on the hanging from the rafters.
It's true.
Yeah, but it's different. I didn't realize Aggie sports was different.
Yeah.
It is different.
It is.
You know, because I'll watch Aggie basketball even on television. I don't know that I'll watch any other basketball on television.
Yeah. I think you've come around. You're pretty... You've gained a lot of knowledge about the game. You even know NBA players.
James Harden.
You know, you've come around quite a bit.
Oh, well.
It's true.
Thanks.
Other than that James Harden comment.
I mean, didn't you go down to the Utah Jazz, meet some of their guys, and do some stuff with them?
Yeah, Rajah Bell.
Rajah, yeah.
Oh,
so
yeah. Rajah.
And did some stuff at the training facility. Fun fact about that, I actually was – we were in there doing some stuff, and I – went into the
girls' locker room.
No, where they do the press releases and stuff, the press room.
Mm-hmm.
And I sat in the very chair 2 hours before Jerry Sloan sat in that chair and retired from the Jazz.
Whoa.
Who's Jerry Sloan?
He's just this old guy. Okay. He knows a thing or two about basketball.
See?
Ty's not real familiar with Utah Jazz.
Well, they never gave me a tryout, so I don't. Not my favorite.
Wait, they gave Spencer Butterfield a tryout, not Ty Wesley.
Well, no, they didn't. It's facts.
Well, yeah, but weren't they on strike when you were?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Came out at the wrong year.
We should get into that.
During the lockout.
That's
yeah,
right.
That was rough. Let's do get in that a little bit, but let's start off, kind of talk about growing up. You know, family dynamic and playing basketball, because I know you have some older brothers. You have your oldest brother, McKelly, was a standout at BYU. Played basketball there. Yeah, at school down south. And what it was like having your older brother just kind of push you and different stuff and, you know, your whole family stuff. Just let's talk about that, where you grew up.
Yeah, so I grew up in Orem, Provo, Utah. I have four older brothers, and they all are very competitive, and they all are big boys, and they play basketball. And so we grew up kind of being the youngest of the older ones. And I just wanted to be like my brothers. You know, I watched them. I watched them have success. I watched them in high school win state championships. And then McKelly, he was kind of the one I looked up to the most. He was the oldest brother. And he was a great player for BYU. He was the Mountain West Conference Player of the Year. And then he went, continued on and played professionally. Then I had my next brother play at UVU.
Is that Russ?
Russ played at UVU. And then the brother that was closest to was Tika. And we played on the high school team together. He was a senior. I was a junior. Played AAU together. And he was a great player, too. And I learned a lot from him. And he played at Salt Lake Community College and then UVU. And so I just wanted to be like my brothers as a kid. You know, I grew up watching them be successful. And so that's how I got started and pretty much learned how to play ball with them in our backyard. And my dad played as well, you know. So it was just a basketball family, and that I enjoyed competing, enjoyed playing ball. And then in high school, I started getting offers, and BYU came in and offered me.
Yeah.
And
did that play into McKelly playing there?
Absolutely. I wanted to be just like McKelly in every way. And so I wanted to follow his footsteps and go to BYU.
When did they offer you? Like, what? How old were you?
I was a senior.
Oh, okay.
So it was the start of my senior year. I think it was like September, October, one of those months. They came in and offered me a scholarship. And, you know, I was a senior. I was like, sweet, I can follow my brother. I can go to BYU. And so I committed to him verbally. And then maybe 2-3 months down the track, they came back. And they're like, oh, we actually don't have a scholarship for you, even though we told you we did, and you committed to us, and so every other college has written you off. And so they really hurt me because, first off, I love that school, and I went to every game for 4 years to watch my brother. And so it hurt, you know. My brother turned their program around, and so I was like, what the heck? And then I became a real Aggie and hated BYU.
Right.
And then,
as you should.
And then, you know, and then I had a really good experience with Coach Morrow. He came in, sat down on my couch, and said, look, we want you at Utah State. We'll make it work for you any way we can.
And your high school coach was like best friends with Stu, right?
They were best men at each other's weddings. So,
no kidding. I didn't know
there
that.
Was a connection there. And,
oh, cool.
And so Stu really treated me well, was honest with me, and it was something, a breath of fresh air compared to how I was handled with Coach
Dave
Cleveland.
Rose. Oh, Cleveland.
No, Dave Rose was actually very pro me. He wanted me to come. The other assistant didn't want me to come, and the head coach, Cleveland, didn't want me to come.
Oh, okay.
That being said, we played Coach Cleveland at Fresno State, and I never lost to him.
Heck yeah.
Nice.
So did your high school coach, do you think, did he go ahead and, like, put your name in Stu's ear, say, hey, you should check this guy out?
Yeah, well, Stu had offered me before I signed.
Oh, okay.
Before I committed, excuse me, to BYU. And Stu was always trying to get me, but, yeah, after BYU kind of hosed me, then my head coach talked to Stu, and Stu came back down, and it worked out.
Oh, that's cool.
Then,
I was going to say, what's that like having Stu Morrill sit on your couch and be like, you're going to come be an Aggie?
Well, let me tell you, Stu Morrill is a different guy when he's in the recruiting phase.
Yeah.
You know, he's nice, and he'll talk stories with you. We went to the same high school. Then you get there on the first day of practice, and he'll say it. He'll say, yeah, I'm not the same guy. You're going to see a difference, Stu. You're going to realize that was a facade to get you here. Now I'm going to show you what I really like.
Well, I feel like he's done that in life. Like, he had, you know, basketball Stu, and now he's got grandpa Stu, because the dude's always on Facebook.
Stu Morrill's a different man than he was in
when he was here.
He's always just like the nicest dude reaching out to people. Like he's seriously so fun now.
But I always, you know, that being said, Stu Morrill did me so well, and I'll have nothing but respect, and I was just so grateful that I got to play under him.
Yeah, you know, it was fun last night. Me and Ty and a whole bunch of old basketball players got together, and we had a little barbecue. There was Gary Wilkinson and Spencer Nelson and a few others. And it was fun to hear a whole bunch of stories about Stu.
Well, I imagine. I imagine.
And some impressions of, like, Stu picking up stuff off the ground.
Oh, man.
I don't know who did that, but it wasn't me.
Yeah, that's right.
I believe you.
Actually, I'd seen Nate Harris do an impression of...
Nate Harris does the best impressions, for sure.
Of Coach Morrill picking up some paper.
Who was it that did one for us before... it was Nate Bendel when we were doing his episode. He was trying, afterwards he tried to show us after he described it to me, and I was like, oh, that's not at all what I envisioned.
Yeah. So it's just fun to hear all the stories about Coach during the game. And, you know, because there's been a few different stories where something really funny would happen and nobody would laugh.
Because out of fear.
Out of straight terror. Terror. Yeah.
Yeah.
What was it last night? He'd fallen on the ground.
Oh, he fell over. And
oh, it was JC. He tripped over JC.
JC was tying his shoes. Yeah, JC. Coach Moore could see. Scooted back, fell down, and nobody laughed. The next day in training, he comes in and he's like, oh, you guys are scared of me. I fell on the ground and none of you laughed at me. You're all scared of me. And we're all like, yep. You're right.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, that's terrified. So funny. Yeah.
It's funny because he's, like, so opposite now. Like,
yeah.
You could sit with him and talk for hours, where I was terrified to talk to him in college. I was the captain my senior year. They're like, hey, you need to go talk to him. Practice is too long. I said, yeah, all right. Talk to the assistants. Hey, can you go tell Coach? I would never go up to his office. I was so scared of him.
That is so awesome. You're like, yeah, I'll go talk to him. He goes and cries in the locker room for an hour. And then I can't talk to Coach.
Tim, can you tell Coach that the guys think practice is getting a little too long? Can you?
And you know Tim's like, yeah, sure, I'll tell him. He goes and says the same thing.
Tim's the same. Assistant coaches were the same way. Like, you go talk to the big guy. Paper, rock, scissors. Whose turn is it?
Oh, that's so funny.
Okay, so you came to Utah State your true freshman year,
mm-hmm.
or you're, you know, right out of high school, and you redshirted, correct?
Correct.
Lived in the dorms with Matt Formisano,
mm-hmm.
right across from J.C. Carroll.
Right next to, yep.
And so you guys, what was like your first year?
That was an interesting year. You know, to be your – it was hard, man, to be – I went from being the man in high school to being a nobody in college and not getting it, not being able to play. So you practice every day, but you don't get to, you know, play. And it was hard. It was a really hard year for me. But it was also a year where I was really stupid, and I was on my own for the first time. So I didn't go to class. I stayed up all night, and my grades really, really suffered, and – I almost became academically ineligible. You know, if you fall below a 2.0, you're academically ineligible, and I was 2.1 for that whole first year. Okay. So it was a growing year for sure. And fortunately, my mom got me on my mission, and then, you know, I grew up on my mission, came back, and I raised my grades. But I got great experience, you know, and it was the best thing for me. I was playing behind Spencer Nelson, Nate Harris, Cassiano Mateus. I wasn't going to play, you know, so I had to redshirt, you know, not waste a year. And those guys, I mean, there's not a better crew to learn from. Spencer Nelson was my roommate on the road sometimes. Nate Harris, WAC Player of the Year or whatever you know. And so it was great. You know, I grew up on the basketball court and not so much off the court, and then figured it out on my mission.
And where was that?
It was in Oaxaca, Mexico. But I guess I didn't grow up on my mission because I came back and I was still – all over the place.
You did enough growing.
Well, yeah. I grew up in the classroom.
Yeah.
And then off the court was
kind of helped you learn how to study and stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so you go on a mission, you're in Oaxaca. You probably stand out there.
I do. So Oaxaca is known for being the shortest and the darkest of the Mexicans and the poorest state in Mexico. So I stood out like a sore thumb.
Yeah, I served in Guerrero and Cuernavaca, like Morelos, that area too. And the Oaxacanses, and what's the other state? So Quintana Roo is really, well, it's got a little more tourism now, but it used to be pretty poor as well.
Yeah.
That's cool.
When you say in short, like how short are you talking?
Oh, dude.
Like legal, I don't know what the correct term is.
Little people?
Short people.
Yeah.
What about, like, as short as your wife?
Shorter than my wife, for
sure. Shorter than your wife?
I had a companion that was 4'9".
Wow.
Yeah. They thought it'd be funny. The shortest MIP elder with the tallest elder.
And so that was funny.
And it was funny.
Like holding his hand like a little kid.
He's just like, come on, buddy.
He's like, come on, buddy. We got to go. We're going to go knock some doors. Let's go.
That's how they got to talk to like 90% of the people.
We got in a lot of doors. Like, look at this. Maybe they'll juggle and do something. Put him on his shoulders and do something, you know?
Maybe they're luchador wrestling teammates.
That would have been awesome.
We could have put a mask on and done it. Got it done.
Okay, perfect. So you spent 2 years in Mexico, and then you came back to Utah State. What was your first actual year to play?
So that was 2007, 2008. And it was funny. I came back, and I called JC, and I said, JC, who's in my spot? And he said, oh, Steve Ducharme's there. And this guy's started every year as a junior, going to be a senior. You're probably not going to start ever. I said, all right, we'll see. Came back, and, you know, I hadn't played basketball for 2 years. You don't play basketball in Mexico,
right?
You know.
No, yeah.
You play soccer.
Yep.
And so I was out of shape. I couldn't lift the bar in the weight room, but, you know, we started working. And I was fortunate because I came back in, I think it was June, so I could get, I came up to Utah State, lived with Nick Hammer, JC, and started working out, getting my body right. And fortunately, 10 games into the season, I got put in the starting lineup.
Really?
Wow. That's tough to do.
With Stu Morrill, it's really tough to do. Yeah. J.C. Carroll was a guy that straight in started.
Right.
But I had a guy who was a senior, started every game as a junior, and I was fortunate enough to take a spot and not give it back the whole year. And so we were actually 5-5 to start our first 10 games. And he put Tyler Newbold and myself in the starting lineup, and we went on like a 9-10 game win streak. Which was
sweet.
That's awesome.
Weren't you and Tyler a part of the most winningest class?
So Tyler actually has one more win as a starter than me because senior night, Steve Ducharme started.
Oh yeah, that's right.
So he's got one more than me. But yeah, we were the most winningest class in the history of Utah State basketball.
That's crazy.
That is awesome.
How many games did you guys lose in the Spectrum while you were here?
I lost one game. So I think I was 68-1.
Oh, my gosh.
My 4 years of being...
St. Mary's?
St. Mary's, on a bogus call.
Yeah, I remember
that. It was a charge call.
Yeah, 68-1 or 67-1, something like that.
Compared to, like, other places in the country, that's got to be one of the highest winning percentages of a player ever. At a home court, right? Like, that's got to, I mean, you one loss. The only way to be better is to never lose a game on your home court, right? That's incredible. Yeah.
It was, I mean, we just had that feeling going into every game, like, how are they going to beat us?
Yeah. Right. Seriously, explain that for a second. Did you guys come into a game thinking you could beat anybody in the Spectrum?
Absolutely.
Was there 100%. Any team at the time you think that could, like, that you could have, like, we might have trouble with them, or they might not.
I'm sure.
Might not win.
I'm sure if we played, the bigger teams do. I'm sure they would have probably could have beat us for sure. But we went in, and there were games we were down. We were down within the last 5 minutes of the game. I remember there was a game against Long Beach State where we were down, and that we found a way to win. Yep. We always found a way. Wichita State had us on our heels. Found a way to win. It just never felt like we could, at the end of the game, look at the scoreboard and be losing. It just never felt that way ever.
Now, do you feel that's more of a Ty Wesley mentality, or do you feel like that actually was everyone on the team's, like, because I know obviously JC and Tyler, those guys are incredible competitors, but you're notoriously, like, confident in what you're doing. Like, you prepare and then you go and you execute, and you always had that kind of attitude on the court. From a fan's perspective, we'd love seeing that. But do you feel like that's more you, or was that really the whole team kind of like, no, we're just going to never lose in the Spectrum?
I've never thought of that, to be honest. I thought it was everybody.
Well, then it was. It was.
You know, I thought it was everybody. I thought it was everybody, all my guys, you know, and I'm sure it was.
Well,
you know,
like, I can tell you from a fan perspective, I'm pretty sure it was all the fans too.
Definitely,
like,
yeah, the fans.
We came in, like, expecting wins.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Not
yeah.
even, like, we wanted a good game a lot of times, and we figured we'd get some good games. We like, you know, people like the coming down the stretch and then us pulling ahead by 10 or whatever. Not me. I want to get ahead by 50 and stay ahead by 50 the entire
game. I love those up by 40 chants. Those are my favorite.
Yeah. I mean, and the feeling was the same on the court. Like, we were ready to get the fans saying, I believe that we will win. Winning team, losing team. We would wait for those chants. Mm-hmm. You know, we would. So game started at 7. We made sure we were on the court at 6, because at 6 the gates open and you see an avalanche of people running down.
Oh yeah.
So we would, like, oh crap, I gotta go. We would be getting taped, and I'd run out half mid taped. So I'd be like, dude, I gotta see this. Then I'll run back up and get taped. You know, like, we knew what was going on, and it was a spectacle. You see people, and I saw people bust their heads. You know, like, run down. One kid was so athletic, and he scaled these stairs, and I was like, how is he running so fast down these stairs?
Dude, they would take 3 or 4 at a time.
No kidding. Oh, that's
so
terrifying.
So fast, and I'm like, going upstairs, I get it. You're probably not gonna fall. Downstairs, you just,
dude, one misstep. That's all it takes.
And these kids were so coordinated, but I was like, man, you should join the team. That's impressive. Like, so fast getting down the stairs. It's like, this is sick.
Dude, that's cool.
Yeah.
And then how was that? Because you'd go watch that, and then 10 minutes later, the entire student section was full.
Yeah, full. And then you're getting warmed up, and you're hyped, but then you just hear, I believe that, with the whole thing jumping and it'd be shaking, and you're like, dude, I have goosebumps and the game hasn't started. You know, my senior night, I was teary-eyed. I had tears in my eyes. Went out and we killed somebody by 100 points.
Yeah.
You know?
It's awesome.
So let's jump into some of, like, your more memorable moments in the Spectrum. What are some of, like, I'm going to say some of my favorite Ty Wesley.
Yeah, I
things.
Actually was really wanting to hear some of yours with him here, because we've talked about Ty a lot.
Yeah, well,
because you're best friends.
A couple of my favorites aren't necessarily anything A, people would probably notice, or B, weren't really extraordinary to anybody else. But right before the team would run out of the tunnel, Ty would yell, you know, Chihu. It's kind of a Polynesian thing, you know, Chihu. You could hear just that Chihu, and I'd always get chicken skin because I knew my buddy was coming down that tunnel with all the boys, and you know, you'd always hear that, and it's in some of the highlight reels and stuff like that. You know, Ty just yelling Chihu.
That's awesome.
Was always, like, one of my favorites. And then when Ty would, he'd come down. You know, they'd introduce him. He'd give 3 claps, and then he'd do the salute, and then as a senior, he'd turn, and then we'd salute each other.
That's awesome.
That's true.
That was always
that's all true.
That's all true. Most of the stuff he says is not true. That was all true.
And then and then one of my favorite on-court moments in the Spectrum with Ty was actually a halftime, and Ty bust the backboard.
Oh, yeah.
It would have been cool if I would have broke the backboard in the game. Not so cool when you're in warm-ups, shot at the backboard. Oh, sweet, dude. We have 45-minute delay.
Yeah, dude, middle of the game, 45-minute delay. But I remember that during that game, I actually went and took pictures with the other team mid-court.
Yeah.
They're like, hey, could you – because it was like some like small team in like Wyoming.
Yeah.
Right? And they're like, hey, one of the guys, like, hey, could you come get a picture with us? And so, like, I will take pictures with the team mid-court.
That's awesome.
During this break, right?
And that then, is awesome.
And then as they're putting on the new one, boom, broke that backboard.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I didn't remember the second one.
They actually gave me the backboard.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
But I don't know where it is now.
Yeah.
I put it
somewhere.
It's
hard to keep track of, right? But gonna move it around.
Yeah, some of my favorite moments were – obviously, winning a championship was always good. One thing that I remember that was really cool was, I think it was senior night, our last home game in the Spectrum. We won.
and I ran to the crowd, and I ran to this guy, and I jumped, and they all picked me up and crowd surfed me halfway up, and then I kind of got scared because I kind of started dropping. They weren't as strong in the second half of the student section.
Yeah, yeah.
So like, put me back. But that was really cool. I got in trouble with my girlfriend at the time. She's like, "Why are you running to Bill and not to me?" And I was like, hey, part of the moment. I said I was going to crowd surf. I crowd surfed. Yeah, it was sure. Awesome.
Maybe you get a crowd surf?
Yeah, I was gonna say, exactly.
I said, don't worry about it.
Yeah. That's so funny.
Yeah,
that's cool. I remember that moment too. I was on this other side, opposite like corner where you get, were taking you up, and I was like, they're gonna surf him out of here. Like he's gone. They're gonna get him all the way out.
Yeah. That was really fun. It was, and it, to be honest, it made games very special for me. Having literally one of my very best friends in the world on the court. And
where's those tissues? Ty's tearing up again.
Well, this is the thing. We'd be on that side for a free throw or something. The game would be stopped. I'd be taking the ball, and I'd be like, "Bill, what up, dog?" And be like, "Hey." And we just would have a full conversation mid-game.
Yeah, I love it.
You know, and then Bill would say some wild stuff to the guy next to me on the other team, and I couldn't hold a straight face. I'd start laughing. And then the guy would try to hold a straight face. Half the time, he was laughing.
Right, right.
And so it was like, I could have a conversation with Bill and say, "Hey, watch this. I'm gonna do this to this guy or something," and he'd just laugh, and we'd carry on like we were not playing a serious basketball game.
Dude, that's what it didn't feel like it was like a big thing. Like even during some of the most stressful games too, like some of the biggest games, we were just messing around. I had to think how to say that.
Nice catch.
Messing around. Like, you would never even guess. Like,
no.
There's a big game on the line.
Well, that would help. Like, that helps when you're in a pressure situation.
Right.
You're playing in your backyard. You're hanging out.
And that's part of the reason I felt like you were a fan favorite. That, and you were pretty emotional on the court whenever, you know, it was a bum call or whatever. But we saw the interaction with you and Bill. And there were so many times, and I think I might have mentioned this to Bill a few different times, but there were so many times we'd be sitting there as fans, and Bill would get up in his costume or whatever, and everyone in an Ag uniform is like got their head down, just shaking their head, like trying so hard. Because, like, Stu's their coach, right? So then all of a sudden, you like see a few shoulders start bouncing on because he's the Little Mermaid or something. Then you look at the opposing team, and then they're all kind of, oh man, they're trying even harder not to laugh, right? And so to see you interact with Bill and like not pretend like it was not happening made it for us like, this is so much fun. Yeah. So much fun.
Yeah. I mean, I just in that moment, I lived for that. I loved it, you know, and And when you get to know me, so people tell me, and they tell my wife, they like, when we were getting married, someone's like, "Are you sure you're married? He looks like he'll abuse her." And I'm like, because they didn't know me. They just saw me on the court being this guy.
So it's like, you're gonna like, give her an elbow.
He got a lot of technicals, and he throws a lot of elbows. You better watch out. And I'm like, when you get to know me, I'm a kid. And so in the big moment situation, Bill stands up as Little Mermaid. I'm like hitting the other guy.
Like, look at this guy. Like
I'm having a great time, and that's how I have to play basketball. I can't take it too serious. I mean, although I'm intense and I'll get serious, and if a guy starts talking trash to me, I go to a dark place. But
that's a Wesley trait.
Yeah. I go to a dark place, but
yeah, it is.
For 85% of the game, I'm pretty happy, especially when we're winning and I'm getting buckets. You know,
getting buckets.
Yeah. We had some good times on and off the court, but on the court was, I don't know, I felt like we could just do anything at that point. Like on the
off
court.
The court, you felt that way too.
No, I didn't.
He did.
No, so this is the thing.
Hold on,
Bill.
No, Bill.
Bill's head got really big.
Shut
and so,
up. I did.
So
not.
we'd go to like some free party or something, and there'd be a line to get in or something. And I'm standing in line, and be like, "We don't wait in lines. Come on!"
Oh, I know that.
Grab me, pull me around, and I'm like, "All right, I guess we don't wait in lines. Later," and we walk by. So honestly, we should take this time. There's a lot of people in Logan that probably do not like us. And
let me say this: like, first off, I want to throw this little caveat in there. That's true, but usually because
that was the caveat.
Hold on. Usually because I had helped organize it, or I had done something, and so I was part of it, or they had asked me to come do something at the thing, and I said, yeah. So, like, we didn't have to wait in lines because we were part of the crew. It's just like,
I mean, I'll say this. And because I did a lot of the events, and you did help like with Catch Fire. We talked about that, yeah. Stuff like that. But like when it comes to certain people, we wanted them to be there, right? Like Ty Wesley, like you tower over everyone. We want you to be at those parties because other students want to come be at that same party. In fact, speaking of parties, and I think I might have told you this story, I had a birthday party one summer just before school started, and it was at the Tramp House down here. And it was like a blackout party where everyone wore like white, and then we had highlighters and black lights. And you walked in. Ty Wesley walks in, and I was like, why is he at my party? But all the girls that organized it were from Orem and I guess knew you from back then.
Nice.
And I was like, all right, I made it. Ty Wesley's at my party. I don't even know how long you stayed, but it was
I want to just throw this out there. Where else can you have a place, a house called the Tramp House?
And it doesn't mean anything.
And it's not offensive.
Yeah. It has to do with the trampoline in the yard. It literally is why they called it that.
But yes. And what other state calls them tramps?
I know.
That's true.
Yeah.
But I do want to, like, there's a lot of people that I probably pissed off or offended. And I just want to say sorry.
Yeah.
If you're listening, if I hit you in the face with a water balloon or punched you in the face or...
Whatever.
Said something, jumped in front of you in line.
That was Bill's fault.
The lit some doo-doo on your porch, on fire. Any of those, I apologize. You know, I don't do that anymore.
Well, like, and I don't think it was because you had a big head or I had a big head. It was just us being morons. Like, we were just immature. Like, I would say it was just us being immature and having fun. And then we realize, like, you can realize later, like, oh, maybe I shouldn't have just, like, walked into that party or, like, showed up earlier to where people knew I had helped out with this rather than make it look like I just was, you know, walking in.
But I will say that's one of the luxuries of Cache Valley. I feel like for the most part, especially with some of the – I almost said it in Spanish, but the – like the – prank kind of stuff that you could get away with in Logan that you probably can't get away with in a lot of other towns. Like, they're not going to call the police a lot of
very,
times
very
over
true.
Some of
and
that.
And we got away with a lot of things. Like...
Fireworks.
Bill's obsessed.
So, you know the fireworks that have the tube and they shoot up? The
mortars.
Ones? Mortars, yes.
Yeah.
So, you put them on the ground, line them to pop up. Well, Bill thought that was not cool enough. I thought it was great. So, first he picks it up and holds it above his head and shoots it up.
I was like,
dude, you're nuts. Then he's like, you know, I'm going to shoot one down the street. Shoots one straight down the street.
Bing, 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 bing.
The intersection. Boom.
Where was this at?
This is
where I live.
Oh, okay.
So there's...
You usually didn't want to walk
there,
by
there are so many stories about this house. 7th and 7th. Still there. We took a picture on it yesterday. This house, so many things went down. It was crazy. But one of the rules that I made for myself was you don't ever... go number two at Bill's house. Because you go in his house and you close that door and you sit down on the throne to take a nice one and all of a sudden you hear zoom, zoom, zoom. And you got three bottle rockets flying by your head.
But it wasn't always just me. Everybody did it. It was
You set the precedence that we could light fireworks inside your house. So
because I didn't own it.
And this wasn't just guys. Really? Anybody went and closed that door in the bathroom, and you instantly saw three guys jump up, grab the lighter, and light bottle rockets on the door. Zoom, zoom, zoom. You know, you didn't really want to bring a girl over to Bill's house either, because if she had to go to the bathroom, she was getting lit up. You know?
Literally.
I feel like she wouldn't want to go into that bathroom anyway.
Right.
Well,
but there's emergency
it
situations.
It was a gross place. Like, it wasn't that bad, but, like... It was a bunch.
It was gross.
It was gross.
It
was like five.
Guys that lived there.
It was like four guys that lived there, but like 100 dudes always there.
So it was the place for me. It was a place where I would go have a bunch of fun, and I'd go home.
Right.
Sleep.
Little sanctuary away from all that.
Yeah.
So, but there were so many stories that I don't even know if we can tell half the stories.
Probably not. Lots of them are fireworks related.
Well, tell them about the belt.
Oh yeah, so. One of my so Ty and I, when we would get bored, a couple times we're like, well, let's just go to the dollar store and we'll figure something out to do. So we'd take like $5 with us to the dollar store, and you know, there's a lot of times we walked away with kites, with silly string and different stuff. Well, the best purchase, the absolute best purchase is I went in and I saw this like WWF wrestling belt, right? Little
cheap plastic.
Little plastic.
Fake sprayed fake gold.
Is, yeah, it yeah. was just.
Didn't even fit around anybody's waist.
It wasn't hardly even fit around your forearm.
Right.
And so I'm like, dude, look at this, Ty. He's like, what are you going to get that for?
Yeah, I was like, that's stupid.
I'm like, are you kidding me? This is, I'm the world champ. That's why I got this. So I grabbed it, and that belt turned into the source
funnest
of the most fun we've ever had.
Yeah. So we go home, and I was like, you can't have that belt. You have to win it.
You like, can't just go
like, all right. This belt. And this was when it was Preston Medlin, Bill, and I. We were the three amigos. We're inseparable the whole summer. And so we're like, all right, Bill, what are you going to do to win the belt? Because you don't just get the belt. You have to win it. So there's a rotten banana that had, you know, you open a banana and you eat half of it and then you leave it on top of his piano. And it sat there for like 6 weeks. And it was black. It was not banana bread black, like rotten.
Not usable. Yeah, in a recipe.
Moldy. And it said, eat the banana, you win the belt. Preston says, yep, eat the banana, you win the belt. Bill's like, okay. Takes this black pill off and puts down this banana. Starts it all. Oh, no. That's how he first takes the belt. So he's like, oh, I'm the champ. So the next few days, Preston and I, mainly just me, are trying, how do we win the belt back? How do we win the belt back? You know,
Preston never did win the belt.
He never did. Preston was kind of a wuss. But I did.
Yeah, a couple times.
Yeah,
I did. What'd you do?
You remember? I don't remember.
It was kind of an unfortunate situation. Can't really talk about that one.
Right, but there was a couple.
But I'll tell you how Bill won it back.
Okay.
Okay, so you know Black Cat fireworks? Just the firecrackers.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And they come in like a...
kind of like a belt.
500 pack?
Yeah.
Kind of like a belt. Exactly.
A bandolero.
A bandolero, if you will.
Yeah.
So we said, Bill, he wanted to win the belt back. He was the one that wanted it the most.
Yeah.
Never got it. Didn't hold it the most. But
oh, come on.
Oh.
So he takes his shirt off and he puts this firecracker strip right across his chest like an ammunition. And he said, light it up and you get the belt. So he closes his eyes, puts on these head earmuffs, and we just light that thing up. And he just starts shaking and screaming. And 500 of these firecrackers just going all across his chest. Got the belt back.
That's incredible.
Champion.
Yeah, for sure. You earned that.
That summer was pretty fun.
It was a good summer. We killed Bill three times.
Yeah. So it was
Kill Bill was written after him.
Yeah.
It was right after, you know, I'd been in the hospital, you know, and they, you know, hey, you should take it easy. I'm like, okay, cool. Well, I did kind of take it easy, but then that summer came around. And we just went crazy. We were in the hospital. We went to the ER a few times because I would just collapse. And
yeah, we'd be hanging out in his living room, and Bill's like, "Oh, let's play a game." His house was the game house, right? I'll go get some cards. So he walks to the kitchen, and then you just hear boom, and we run in the kitchen, and Bill's face down, unconscious. Bill's down again.
Let's go to the hospital.
Somebody pull out the new game. Defibrillator.
Yeah.
And so we'd take him to the hospital, and we'd get him right, and he'd have his room, and we'd come see him, and like, let's play a game in his room. And so we're in his hospital room playing games. And
we would pack that room, too.
That was good fun.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I mean, not the part where you fell, but well, just
and like that I they say, were there. That plays into the part of us being immature. Like, looking back now, I'm just like, why was I so stupid with my health?
Yeah.
You know, take care of yourself a little bit better than that, buddy.
It's pride.
Yeah. But and it was pride, and we were having so much fun. I didn't want to take the time.
It was YOLO before YOLO, right?
Like, yeah. Well, I call it YOLT because I've already died once, so it's you only live twice.
Yeah, there you go.
But you know, we just wanted to just go, and I didn't want to miss out on the fun. We were having too much fun.
Do you remember when we would challenge every girls athlete in their sport?
Yes.
So we'd go, and we knew the volleyball players, the soccer players.
Some of the basketball girls.
Yeah. And so we'd be like, hey, we're going to challenge you at your sport. We're going to go 3-on-3. And if we win, and we put like a Jamba Juice on the line.
Yeah.
Like, all right, sick. So we went and played the volleyball girls, sand volleyball.
Yeah.
Beat them.
Who's playing? Who?
Shay.
No. I meant like from the guys.
The three.
Just me, you, him, and Preston. Preston.
I spiked one, broke the volleyball girl's finger. She has season, volleyball season's the first sport to play. Grayson was not happy with us then.
Yeah.
Well, it's not like you did it malicious. It was an accident, right?
Yeah, we're playing volleyball.
Yeah, yeah.
But we beat the girls' volleyball team. Then soccer. We played soccer.
Smash them.
Bill was the best goalie because we made the goal the size of his belly, and he just lay there. It was awesome. They couldn't score on us. Beat them. But that was like the summer of fun. So we went around challenging the
just
girls.
Just to get Jamba Juice. So.
Yeah.
We didn't want to go challenge like the football team or, you know, the track guys or
tennis.
Girls.
Did you guys try to do the women's tennis? They probably kicked
didn't.
Your butts.
They would have.
Yeah, totally smashed
for sure.
Us. Absolutely.
Golf.
Yeah, any
that track. Would have been bad too.
Any
we're picking on the girls.
Yeah,
let's be honest, we kind of want to hang out with them.
Yeah, the yeah, and that's really what it was. We just wanted to hang out with
yeah,
them.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
So obviously this is your college life here, just kind of acting like a moron, having some fun. when did you find time to study?
What?
In
to be
class.
To be honest, so. I graduated as a junior because I had a redshirt year. So I had 4 years, and then I still had my senior year. So I studied more then, and then when I graduated, I took, I started my master's program, but I didn't take a super heavy load of master's classes.
To say the least.
You know, I took.
Bill's one to talk.
I had, well, this was my day. My senior year, I'd wake up late. I'd have one serious class a week. And it was a 4-credit master's class. It was tough. But other than that, I'd come to the TSC and play ping pong with Bill every day.
Yeah, I saw you guys.
And ride
lot.
Bikes.
And so we'd rent the Aggie Blue bikes.
Yep, Aggie Blue
and
bikes.
We'd cruise around, and then we'd come up, and I'd beat him like 21-7 every time in ping pong.
Yep.
That's not true.
And then
it's not.
We'd
I
go
actually,
get some food at the marketplace.
Yep. Taco time.
And we'd always put people on our handlebars of our bikes and just take people around, cruise them.
Yeah. That's and then, awesome. I mean, that was my senior year.
Yeah.
And then I remember, too, Ty had gone to class one night. And we're like, Ty, don't go to class. Like, just hang out. And he's like, guys, I actually have to go to this class. So we were really bummed that Ty was in class. So we had made plenty of trips out to Wendover.
We did that too.
Evanston. Okay.
To go get fireworks. And
gotta replenish.
At the fireworks place, you could buy stink bombs that just smell gross.
Yeah, the little glass.
Vials.
Yeah.
So what we did is during Cut Ty's class, we went in where the door was shut and just smashed these stink bombs right next to the door.
Under the door.
Oh. Smashed them in there. And all. And all of a sudden, like, we go in outside, and then we see Ty and everybody just walking out of class, and then Ty walks out, and we're just like, yeah, we got you out of class.
These idiots.
That is so funny.
But yeah, that got me out of, like, an hour of class. That's my so only funny. Class I had got right. me out of it. Sweet.
That's awesome. So I wanted to ask you this, too. So growing up in the shadows of Mount Timpanogos, when was your first experience in Logan? Like, did you come up a lot as a kid?
That's a great question. So I came up one time for a BYU-Utah State game.
Was this on a visit or just for the game?
No, okay. It was for a game for my brother. My brother was playing.
Yeah.
And I remember sitting there, and I hated the Spectrum. I hated it because you know what they were chanting? They were chanting yeah. this. Wesley, you suck. And they were chanting that the whole game. And I was like, I was so mad. I was like, dude, stop saying that about my brother.
Right.
And so I hated it. I said, Mom, I don't want to go back there. I hate the Spectrum. I hate Utah State. I hate Logan. And that was my first experience in the Spectrum in Logan. And then I came back up on my visit, and it was different. On our visit, it was funny because Spencer Nelson hosted us, and we were talking about this last night. But it was Aggie night, and so we got thrown in the fire. Two me, Matt Formosano, and I, two you know high school seniors coming up here, and they put us on the A, and we kissed some girls, and it was like, Utah State's awesome.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So were you pretty pumped when you decided, okay, I'm gonna go play for Stu, and now I got. This same rowdy crowd on my side, or did that ever really play into it?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when I think I went to a game when I was up here. I don't remember, but it was, you know, you see the videos, and then as a redshirt freshman, not playing, we played BYU up here, and I saw a sign that said, "Thank you, BYU, for Ty Wesley." And I was like, dude, what a sick. Well, I'm not playing, and I got a sign. This is awesome. Like, yeah, yes, I made the right choice, you know. And being a part of that redshirt team, I was on the bench every time, and the fans were nuts. It was so cool. And so it was like this. And then, you know, what's funny is I was actually approached to transfer to BYU when I was in the MTC. And
Excuse me, what?
Certain individual talked to me who had ties with the new head coach at BYU, and I was offered a scholarship at BYU under the table.
Is that legal?
That's insane.
I don't know. But he said, "Hey, come play. Play for BYU. You'll be on scholarship. Come play for BYU after your mission." And I said, "Thanks, but no thanks." You know, I got that bug, you know, and I love the Spectrum, and it was honestly the perfect fit for me and my career, and you know, I don't regret ever coming here.
Cool.
How good you? It was an awesome place.
Yeah, for real.
Exactly. I didn't know that at the time, but you know, I think it all worked out the right way.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about you finally graduate. I don't say finally like you didn't get it done in time. I just mean you got your grades to where you could graduate. Mm-hmm. Bill didn't distract you too much with stink bombs.
It wasn't his grades. It was just like the guy graduates. Like,
excuse me, guys. Academic all conference.
Yeah,
right. I was gonna say by the time you're.
So I found time to study.
You're on like all the walls down in the ESTA Center too.
So, yeah, I found time to study and I got good grades. But you figure it out. You had time management on your mission, so that helped.
So after that, you want to obviously play professionally. When did you really start to feel like there was like a chance to do that? I mean, obviously you're like, I probably have the body for it, the work ethic, things like that. But you're also trying to measure like, do I fit in the NBA anywhere or do I fit overseas? Kind of talk to us a little bit about that process and what that feels like from your standpoint.
Yeah, that's a humbling process, to be honest. Because you're like, you think about it and you're like, man, I'm better than some of these guys right now, but their upside is way better than mine. So it's like, I played against this guy and I put up way better numbers than he did, or I averaged more points than this guy that they're drafting over me, or all these things. But you realize the only way I could play in the NBA was if I could find a niche, you know, if I could find a place where, like, you look at a Matthew Dellavedova.
Yeah.
Not the most athletic guy, not jumps off the chart, not the guy they typically pick, but he found a spot and he played hard at defense, didn't turn the ball over, hit an open shot. And that's where I needed to find a place where they could use me. And so my market went for, you know, normal guys, every team went to smaller scale. And so I knew that NBA was a long shot. I'm not tall enough. I'm not athletic enough. I understand that. And the first thing they do in a tryout is measure you. Measure your height, measure your wingspan, measure your vertical. And the second they did that, they crossed me off, which was fine, and I understood that. But as a senior, I started getting messages from agents. And agents, it's like the whole recruiting process all over again. You got to see which agent you're going to go with because it's a big decision. So that came in, and I had some help. My brother helped me a lot. I had, you know, because he had been down that path before he played professionally in Europe and other places. So he helped me a ton. And then, you know, I was able to move to Vegas and I did an NBA pre-camp where I worked out every day for like 8 hours, lived in Vegas and was on a diet and got in the best shape of my life. Then I got a tryout with the Timberwolves, which went really well. And then I signed to go play in Holland my first year, which was kind of a new thing for me. I was excited. I was nervous, but it was a great place for me to start my career because Holland's very Americanized. Everyone speaks English, and so it wasn't too big of a culture shock for me.
That's cool. And then, walk us through your professional career after Holland, because you're not there now. Obviously.
Hold on, before we get there, let's talk about the lockout because had a lot to play in because there was. The NBA wasn't doing summer league.
Yeah, no summer league. A lot of teams weren't given a ton of tryouts. It was kind of a tough deal.
Right,
but
that's right.
You know, it would have been cool to travel with, for the Jazz, just because I'm a Jazz fan to this day. But, you know, it is what it is. You know, you come out at the wrong time. And like I said, it's all about right place, right time, right fit. And those things didn't align for me, which was fine. You know, I moved on. It was cool to even have the experience to work out with the Timberwolves.
Yeah, that's awesome.
All right, now move on.
Okay, so no,
I'm
then,
glad you brought that up because we definitely – that played into the whole – like your whole thought process. It changes at that point, right?
Yeah, so I think a lot of things would have helped me. If I would have signed with the agent earlier, I would have been to Portsmouth. If I would have if there wouldn't have been a lockout, I would have had a summer league experience. And then who knows what would have happened if I would have played really well then. But, right. You know, who knows? And, you know, I haven't lost any sleep about it.
Yeah.
So –
because you've had a great career.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been very lucky in my career. You know, fortunately, I haven't had too many injuries. I broke my nose again. But other than that, like, I played in Holland, and we won the championship my first year, which was awesome. I went to France the next year, which was cool because I got married in between that year. My first year was really hard. I was by myself, and I really wanted a wife. And fortunately, I found the best wife ever, married her, and we went on our honeymoon. The next day, we moved to France. So we went to France, which was awesome. It was a hard year at the first, but, you know, having a wife there to support me was made it way better. After France, I went back to Holland, did another year there, and then from there I jumped over to New Zealand. I did 2 years in New Zealand, and then I jumped to Australia, did 2 years in Australia, and jumped back to New Zealand. That was last season, did a year there, and now I've signed a 3-year deal in Australia.
A 3-year deal?
Yeah,
that's so awesome.
I'll finish my career with this new team in Melbourne, Australia.
That's awesome. Congrats.
Thank
that's
you.
A big deal.
Yeah. So
I didn't know that. I didn't know it was 3. I knew you re-signed because we've talked to a few of the guys that have mentioned it, but I didn't know that it was 3. That's awesome.
Yeah. So I got to come down and visit. I've never visited him to any of the places, but my wife loves to travel.
This is my plug. So I have a 3-year deal, then I'm retiring. I would love to come back and live and work in Logan, Utah. So whoever's listening to this, 3 years, your boy's going to need a job. Utah State, holla at your boy.
That's awesome. You got some time to work on it.
Yeah, dude. Let's just come back. We'll all come back and work in Logan.
We talked about this. We're going to have offices on campus next to each other. We're going to blow out the middle wall and put a ping pong table there.
And we'll ride our bikes to work.
Yeah. Your rented bikes.
Yeah.
I think we can afford some now.
Yeah. That is so funny. Well, that's awesome. And then where's your wife from?
My wife is from Pocatello, Idaho.
She comes from some strong Aggie blood.
Does she?
So her grandpa is Rod Tuller.
Oh, wow.
Former Aggie coach.
And AD.
Yeah, and AD.
Wow.
Yep.
I didn't know that.
Ty's actually staying with him right now.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so they're big Aggie fans, and she's phenomenal, you know, and we have 2 kids.
I was going to ask you that next.
Yeah.
How many kids you had?
I have a son who's almost 4 and a daughter who's almost 2.
His son's name is Major, and when he was born, because he was born in New Zealand, they didn't want to give him a birth certificate, right?
They didn't want they said that name was not allowed because it was on some list. The funny thing is my daughter was born in Australia, and her name's Royal, and they didn't want to give her birth certificate as well because they said that was a name. So we had to write a letter and say, we're American. We do weird stuff.
Yeah. So, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's just funny. I never thought about naming a kid overseas and having them be like,
well, there's names that you can't.
Right.
Even in the U.S.
Right, right. But I think
there's
funny.
I looked them up once, actually, during that time, and the different states have Satan's one.
Satan.
Some of them, Jesus Christ is some of them. The F word is, like, all of them.
Fair enough.
Yeah, like, it's weird, kind of crazy, but there really is, like, names you can't name your kid.
Yeah.
Like, that's the crazy. F word.
So, which would be
those people weird. Should not be entitled to a kid.
Exactly. I was going to say, if you're doing that anyway, man, you got to rethink life. But so you keep up on Aggie sports. You obviously follow the Jazz, if
I do keep up on Aggie sports. You know, I'm an avid football fan of the Aggies. I love what they've done with bringing Coach Anderson in. And that coaching staff, you know, I know Wonga really well, and I'm excited for them, Frank, and all those guys. I'm excited.
Name a coach that's not Polynesian, would you?
he coach did Anderson? Say Coach A. He's a
pretty good. There you go.
I love what Coach Smith's done. I haven't been able. I keep missing him. I'm trying to meet Coach Smith, but I keep missing him. I go into the office and he's at a meeting. But I love what he's done. And I'm friends with Sam Merrill and Abel, and I like those guys a lot. They're good guys, and I'm just rooting for them and very proud Aggie.
Cool. Have you seen this incoming recruiting class? There's a couple 7-footers.
Yeah, should be exciting.
That's something else.
It's just exciting for me. You know, it was really sad for me for a few years when the spectrum looked like the orange seats. You know, that really hurt when I look and see that, and I was like, that's not. And I tell guys on my team, no, I went to Utah State, but it was different back then. And so it's so good to see the program where it is now and
re-energized.
Having the success and having the fans and it's really good. Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. I'm so excited for this year in sports. So do you follow any of the, I was going to ask if you follow any of the, or I guess not follow, but are you involved at all when you leave playing at Utah State, do you get involved in the recruiting process at any point? Like, do they invite you back to talk to guys? Like, you may not have for time because you're playing overseas, but is that something they do with, like, alum? Because I know football tries to bring some people back. They have, like, a dinner in the spring where they brought, like, I think almost every NFL guy, but Bobby came back for that. Actually, he might have even been here for that. But do you guys do anything like that in basketball?
So I used to with Spencer. So I'm close with Spencer Nelson. When he was on the coaching staff, he would text me all the time and be like, hey, there's this kid in Australia. Do you know him? Can you ask about him? And so I would say, oh, yeah, I played against him, or I talked to his coach. And I'd text him when I was in New Zealand, same thing. He'd ask me about guys.
Oh, I didn't realize from that perspective. That's cool.
We were close. You know, and Spencer and I, you know, we were close. But I haven't done anything lately. That I don't think they really need my help. They're bringing in some good players. So
yeah. I'm excited about it. That's cool.
Well, Ty, we'll just start wrapping up here. Do you have any final thoughts, any things you want to say to Aggie Nation besides I'm sorry?
I was going to say, I need more apologies.
No more apologies. I love Aggie Nation. I'll be Aggie for my whole life. I really take pride in Utah State, and I understand that that Utah State has given me a lot in my life. You know, I don't take that for granted. You know, not just a diploma, but also I have friends that are my lifelong friends, my best friends in the whole world. I met here at Utah State. And relationships and people. And so, you know, I'm just very grateful for the opportunity and the experience that I had as an Aggie, because there was none better. I don't know if you could have had more fun in 4 years than I had while up here.
Amen.
And, yes, I second that. It was a lot of fun.
Ty, thanks for us.
Thanks for coming. Thanks for taking the time to help us out
and just give us a chat. Thanks for being here. It's been awesome.
Could you leave us with our tagline?
Every Aggie is a legend. What's your story?
Thanks, Ty.
Thanks, buddy.